The views and opinions expressed by host and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the Global Liberty Alliance, its network, sponsors, donors, or broadcast platforms. The Global Liberty Alliance provides this podcast for informational purposes. Freedom of speech is a fundamental right and essential for free societies to prosper. Thank you for listening and supporting the mission of the Global Liberty Alliance, dedicated to strengthening and defending fundamental individual rights, free markets, and the rule of law.
And welcome to a Global Liberty Alliance podcast. This is Jason Poblet, your host, this time coming to you from the Space Coast of Florida. We are at our other location. We are now broadcasting from here as well, in addition to our headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. I'm spending some time down here in the free state of Florida, doing some work with some families in Miami and Latin America. So we have positioned ourselves here for a few weeks. Today we have a special program with a family that has been at the forefront of an issue that we care deeply about, accountability for Americans when they are wronged in a foreign country. And of course, that could take many forms of harm at the hands of a foreign government, but it's especially a terrible thing happened in this case. An American citizen lost their life. You know, at times we're called to do some pretty extraordinary things at the most challenging moments in our life, and we just can't quite figure out why. You have all these things just hitting you. And this story of one American family in New Hampshire, the Fakori family, is, I think, one of those moments. You know, in August of 2020, the family had to say goodbye to their beloved Amer, who died from injuries that he sustained while in the custody of the Lebanon General Security. So basically, that's, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that now. That's basically the equivalent of the CIA and the FBI kind of wrapped up in one in Lebanon. For those of you who don't follow Lebanon very closely, they have very close ties to state sponsor of terror, Iran. And as we'll hear from the Fakori family, maybe they disagree with me on this, but I tend to think they are almost like an appendage of the Iranian regime, at least the IRGC. To talk to us about this case, we have Gila and Zoya Fakori, who during the last 2 years and the rest of their family also has been involved with this. They have set out to do several things. They also want to find out what happened to their father. And they started this justice journey to ensure justice, not only for their father and their family, but also to help other Americans. And they've jumped into this, helping other American families too. And we'll hear a little bit about that. So Zoya, Gila, welcome. Thank you for joining us on the GLA podcast.
Thank you so much for having us today, Jason.
Well, so we're going to start with, who wants to go first? I know one of you, give us some context on the case. I think it's going to be Zoya, right? Or it's going to be Gila?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. So give us a little, you know, paint the picture for us. I know it's difficult to do this, but tell people who've never heard about this case, what happened to your family? What happened to your father?
Yes. So back in September 2019, my family, we went on a family vacation to Lebanon. And when we arrived at the airport, my father's passport was detained and he was told, oh, this is just a routine background check. Just come back in a week to pick it up. When my father did return to the Lebanese General Security to pick up his passport, like he was told, he never came back home. We later found out that at the General Security, he was being tortured and forced to sign documents. And then he was then held at the military prison for 7 months in Lebanon under no charges. And due to the conditions that he was put in, his health deteriorated. When he did return to the States 7 months later, he unfortunately passed away shortly after. Since then, we have opened up a foundation called the Amir Foundation, which focuses on shedding light on the human rights abuse that is happening in prisons overseas. And we try to advocate for those being unjustly held and push for accountability efforts, because we are seeing a big gap in the system here in the States. And this is something we want to just try to push and lead the efforts towards accountability.
So Zoya, let me ask you something, because that there's a lot of dates, you know, important dates. We were, your dad passed right at the peak of the start of the pandemic. And
correct.
There were so many things happening back then. How did the U.S. government at that point respond and help bring your dad home?
So during the time, honestly, I feel like one of the big reasons my father did return back home was the effort that my family put. We tried to take any avenue to get on the media and shed light and get Trump. It was during Trump's presidency. So, and try to get Trump's attention on this case, because as many people know, America is a big funder to Lebanon. We send a lot of aid. I think we've sent over billions of dollars to Lebanon. So a lot of our tax dollars goes to this country that is unjustly holding an American citizen, torturing them. And my dad is not the only one that's been through this. So we tried to get on the media as much as possible and shed light to this issue, get the American people to know what's going on in this country and get Trump's attention.
Do you think, Zoya, that, and this is a trick question, but do you think that if you had stayed quiet, you would have seen your dad again?
No, I believe he would have died in Lebanon.
So that pressure. So if a family is listening to you today, and I know you all speak with families that are going through this, what do you all tell them? And then we'll jump back to your dad's story. But what do you tell families when they come to you and they ask you, hey, should I say something? Should I stay quiet? State Department tells me not to say anything, usually. What do you think? Yes. What do you tell them as somebody who's been through this?
You know, the motto at our foundation is silence is not an option. We've noticed that when you do stay silent, the government just tries to push your story under the rug. They try not to shed light on the situation. And this is why it's so important to speak out, because if you don't speak out, you can't get people involved in your story, and they try to hide it. That's the truth. You need to talk about your situation, or else no one will care.
Really. I do believe, I want to add that it is a case by case scenario, but we have seen that when families take their case to the public, and when more people are talking about one specific individual, then it gets the attention of the American public. And this definitely pressures the State Department to take action, as we have seen in the Bring Them Home campaign, as we have seen other families do, either on social media or on the media if they get a chance. It definitely helps get their story out there.
You know, I have to say that it's a remarkable organization that you've all put together in such a short span of time. In fact, you've done a lot of things in a short span of time, and we're going to get to that in one moment. But for the listeners' benefit, this with the help, Foley Foundation, which is another organization, and we'll put links to all these groups so people can know who they are. A lot of these entities didn't exist a few years ago, and Americans and U.S. nationals unjustly detained or held hostage in foreign countries really didn't have a voice out in Washington. And I remember some early cases that we were working on, it was almost impossible to find any group, even in the media sometimes, to take on these cases and talk about these stories. And I agree with you, in most cases, Gila and Zoya, you need to be vocal. You have to go case by case. You also have to be very careful when you go public, because I think there are some situations where you could end up making things worse. Like, I believe the Brittany Griner case has been made worse by some of the public things that U.S. government has said. But when the family speaks up the way you all spoke up, I think that is phenomenal. And if you can organize yourselves and get on a page together, and you've all done it in a way I think other people should emulate, at least take a look at how you all did it. Because here's something else you all did so quickly. And these cases go in two phases. So the first order of business is to bring our loved ones home, right? Safely. And then comes the second phase. If families want to do it, there's an accountability phase. And there's a law in place now for that. You all came out the door in 9 months. So Amr passed away, I think, in August, right? And
yes,
9 months later, you all had filed a lawsuit against the Iranian regime. Tell us a little bit about that lawsuit, because that's part of the accountability process. Not all accountability processes have lawsuits, but that's part of it. And we're going to talk a little bit more in a minute about other tools that we have. But why did you all file that lawsuit? And we're going to provide people a copy of it so they can read it, because it's a phenomenal history breakdown of not just what happened to Amr, but of history that I think Americans need to know about liberty efforts in Lebanon that are still going on to this very day. And also, lesson to people that Hezbollah and Iran harbor grudges, and what they did to Amr is a grudge, I believe, for something he did on behalf of his country so long ago?
Yes. So, Jason, first, I would like to say we are lucky that we live in the United States, that we're able to voice our concerns and talk about accountability. We know how the Lebanese government work. They always shut down anyone who talks against the regime or against their human rights abuse. So that's why when our father died and living in this country, we are privileged to be able to go after accountability. And we feel every family, whether their loved one, whether they lost their loved ones during illegal detention or their loved ones come back home safe to them, accountability is very important because our loved ones endure torture. They are illegally detained for months, sometimes years. Someone has to pay for the illegal detention of our Americans. So we filed the lawsuit in the Washington U.S. District Court against Iran because we believe Iran controls every sector of the Lebanese government through its proxy, Hezbollah. And my dad was illegally detained under orders of Hezbollah in the Lebanese General Security. If you people who don't know a lot about Lebanon, Hezbollah controlled every sector from the security services to the military courts, even to the president, previous president, Michel Aoun. And when our lawyers went and talked to the judges, to the president, they all got the same answers. We cannot do anything because Hezbollah wants Amer in prison and we cannot do anything about it. So that's why we filed the lawsuit against Iran. This is how the accountability effort started from our end. And we also always have meetings with the U.S. administration, the State Department, to also hold officials in Lebanon for the illegal detention of our father, whether through the Levinson Act, by holding their visas, sanctions against officials. But we really would like to see accountability efforts taken seriously by our administration.
So the lawsuit was part of it. And I know you've all had meetings with Congress, many congressional officials. I know Senator Shaheen Senator Shaheen from your home state was very helpful helping bring your dad home. In fact, that's a great story that nobody's written about how, despite all the rhetoric in Washington, Republicans and Democrats and all that nonsense that the media tries to hype up, there's a lot of good that came out of that relationship between Trump officials, Shaheen officials, and others, and the work that you all did. I mean, it worked the way it was supposed to work, even though it was smothered by the other headlines and the pandemic was going on. But I can't underscore to people listening to this how brave what these ladies are doing is, because this is one of the more difficult places to engage in accountability work. And it's one of the reasons why we have this law on the books that we keep referencing generally, the Robert Levinson Hostage Recovery and Hostage Taking Accountability Act. And that word is purposely there for a reason, because it's a place that I think if it was Zoya or Gil, I don't know who said this, that it is technically a democracy, but it really isn't. It's a failed state, in my opinion. It's holding on barely. And I really feel for the Lebanese people, and especially if you're Christian, you're a Christian family, it's even more complicated because you're a minority within a minority. And I believe that's another podcast program, but Lebanon, frankly, needs a big shakeup and one that involves removing Hezbollah, if possible, from everything, if it could be done, because it's not going to stop happening. It happened to Amr, it happened to other people. But accountability, which is what these ladies are doing, is extremely difficult. These lawsuits are hard to do. They're emotionally drained. They can cost a lot of money. I know they're not doing it for the money, but it is a drain, and they're hard.
Yeah, and we are threatened started
exactly.
This journey.
I was getting to that. And tell us a little bit about that, because you all also held a conference, which is part of an accountability process. They tried, and they did an excellent conference in Lebanon. Tell people what happened when you tried to shine a light on your dad's case with lawyers and scholars and experts in Lebanon.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, when we opened the foundation, family members were taken by the Lebanese General Security and we were threatened to be silenced. We were threatened not to talk about what happened to our father. Then, because Hezbollah controls every sector in Lebanon, even the media, every media that will try to shed light on this story or other stories, and especially our father's story and the efforts that we as a foundation and as a family are doing to hold Lebanese officials accountable, they either get threatened or they are taken to be interrogated and to ask why they interviewed us or why they're talking to the Fakori sisters. So it's, so as you said, Jason, it's emotionally draining. We are put under threats. For example, we cannot go back to our home country. We were advised by the State Department not to go because of the threats we receive. So we understand how families sometimes shy away from accountability efforts, especially publicly, and especially when we don't see that our administration is backing us up 100%, according to what you talked about, the Levinson Act.
So what is, you know, how, on the human side of this for your family, how's your mom doing, and how are your relatives in Lebanon doing, given all this has happened in such a short span of time? I mean, how do you cope with something like this?
I mean, it's been very, very hard for my mom because, you know, all this happened within a year. They went on a family vacation. 7-8 months later, my dad came back almost dead, and then he died a few months after. They've been married for 34 years, so you can imagine she lost her soulmate, she lost her partner, she lost everything in a matter of a year. For us as a family, we are still suffering every day, and part of it because we don't have closure, we don't have accountability for what happened. We have not received justice yet for the death of our father, and this is what we're trying to do. And for our family in Lebanon, obviously, you know, in Lebanon, there is no freedom of speech. There is no democracy the way we see here in the United States. So they are not free to say what they want. They are not free to even support us because they are afraid. They're afraid for their family. They're afraid for their loved ones. And we cannot blame them.
What does justice look like, I guess, for you both, Zoya and Gila? And we're speaking with Zoya and Gila Fakori from the Fakori Foundation. What would justice look like? I guess you really, it's different for every family. And by the way, folks, it doesn't always go public. Sometimes a lot of this work gets done privately, but the work that this foundation is doing, they've chosen to be public partly for the very reason that they can't do much else in their ancestral homeland. And if they did, the story would be smothered and nobody mm-hmm. would know, and other Americans would fall in harm's way. So you have the ability to do that. You know, so what do you think justice looks like for a family who's thinking about this or who's going through this process? What things were you all looking for in this journey that you're on?
I think justice for my family looks like anyone who did play a role in our father's illegal detention, in his torture, and everything that he endured that led to his death, they be held accountable for their actions. And it's not just for my family, this request. This request is for every person that is unable to return to Lebanon because of the threats they have received from Hezbollah. For every individual that has been tortured at the Lebanese General Security, who's being unjustly held in the military prison in Lebanon. This is justice for all of us that have endured this. And unfortunately, no one is talking about it. No one wants to fully support us in this, which has been the hardest thing for our family to endure.
And Gila, what does it look like to you?
For me, justice, you know, we cannot bring our father back, but we can at least bring forth people who were involved in his death and in his torture. Like Zoya said, it's we did the lawsuit in order to shed light on Iranians' influence in Lebanon. And we are following up with accountability efforts in order to shed light on individuals who are proxy of Iran in Lebanon. And by doing this, we're not only benefiting this case or our father's legacy, but we are benefiting every Lebanese American and every Lebanese who cannot speak up, who cannot go back to their own country. So no. We hope, yeah.
No, go ahead. You hope that?
We hope that we, through this, we can really get justice for all Lebanese people and everyone in the Middle East who is undergoing radical regimes like the one in Lebanon.
Well, you know, your dad and your family are, you know, it's the pure American dream. I mean, you all came here, and I could tell you live life to the fullest. And he was a man of energy. I never met your father, but I have learned about him, read about him. And I can tell that he was a patriot, that he loved America. And of course, he loved his ancestral homeland because that's where he was from. But you came here, you in 2001, you lived in New England, you fought, you were business owners. To have this taken away from you the way it was and not get an explanation, I think that's the part that's especially when you factor in Lebanon, mm-hmm. Hezbollah, how your family came here. So the fact that you're fighting, yes. I mean, it's beyond ironic. It makes me upset because you came here to get away from that stuff. And you guys are hardworking Americans, your dad, I think you're a small business owner, and they made it work. The Fakuri family made it work. And all they're asking the U.S. government to do is to help them hold to account under the law. Okay, we have a law for that, folks. I know people listen to this podcast who are in the U.S. government. Stop dragging your feet on this. Help this family out already. There's no reason you cannot be imposing sanctions now. There's no reason you cannot be blocking assets of Lebanese now. There's no reason you cannot be blocking Mickey Mouse visas. Those are people who come from Lebanon, the children of the elite, Hezbollah family members who come here, go to our schools, go to our hospitals, go to our university. Those people shouldn't come to America if they were connected at all to this case.
That's the thing. We're very confused how Lebanese official Trump, an American citizen who died of the illegal detention.
They don't. They're not supposed to. But I think our government's become so... And this, by the way, folks, is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is an American issue. So we need to become more human in our foreign policy. We spend a lot of time advocating for the human rights of everybody else. Everybody else. In fact, I bet you if you go into the Twitter feed of the Lebanese ambassador, there's a lot of things, our ambassador of Lebanon, sorry, you'll see a lot of wonderful things, Lebanon this, Lebanon that, human rights that, programs for this, USAID money. I never see tweets about Americans and the plight that they're suffering, like the Fakuri family. Let me ask you all some questions. Let me go, and if you don't want to answer these, that's okay. I don't want to get you all in trouble, but how many tweets or how many accountability tweets has the State Department issued on your dad's case?
Zero.
Have not seen any.
And how many sanctions have been imposed that you know of for anybody involved in the, I'm going to say it, maybe you can't say it, but I would say the murder of your father. How many Lebanese officials have been sanctioned? Do you know?
Zero. And not only that, when we meet with the officials and high-ranking officials from the State Department and we talk about torture in Lebanon and in the Lebanese general security, one official said to us, well, torture happens everywhere. This is what it is. Another, when we talked about the violation of the Leahy law, this is a violation of the Leahy law because torture is happening in security services, in military courts, in military prisons, where our tax dollar fund these services. They avoid the question, or they, first of all, we see encouragement. They want enthusiasm. They want to start working on this, then all of a sudden they just stop responding to us. So not only there's no tweets and there's no sanctions, we're violating the Leahy law, we're violating the Levinson Act, and it just puts families like we're vulnerable. We're going publicly about this.
Well, you know, the good by the way, folks, the Leahy law is, and briefly, it's a law that basically prohibits the export or sales of weapons, arms as defined under the statute, to places like Lebanon. And I can't tell you how many years, decades now, several policymakers have been trying to block exports of weapons to pretty much anything you send to Lebanon now, go to Hezbollah. They claim it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, Hezbollah gets U.S. weapons. I don't care how much U.S. officials lie about that. They have this crazy notion that you can somehow civilize those people. And in my book, they're savages, and Hezbollah cannot be managed. They are an appendage of the Iranian regime. But we're hearing from the family here, no sanctions, no visa bans. Frankly, I'm upset they even had to file this lawsuit, because if the U.S. government had been doing their job, they wouldn't have to be filing this lawsuit. So they're putting the burden on you to get justice, which is fine. You know, the family can go out and pursue justice. But if they follow the Levinson law, they wouldn't have to file these lawsuits. I'm sure they don't want to have the all this stuff in the public domain. I'm glad it's there, and you all are providing a service to the hostage advocacy community, the human rights community. But this administration made it a priority, they said, in their foreign policy to, you know, champion human rights. And I don't hear them championing human rights here. And by the way, I was critical of the other administration for certain things they did and didn't do on hostage issues. So it's not a Republican or Democrat thing. But you're doing a lot.
Jason, I wanna touch base that recently an executive order from President Biden was done in order to hold accountable officials involved in the illegal detention of our Americans. My dad was a hostage under the Levinson Act, and yet we have not seen any accountability efforts from our administration.
I mean, why is that? Why do you all think that's happening?
I mean, instead, we see them praise Lebanese officials. Some Lebanese officials came to the U.S. recently on private planes paid by our U.S. Tax money. So that's why we're very confused about why a country like Lebanon, Lebanon, again, benefit a lot from the U.S., whether through aids, whether through money to the Lebanese armed forces. So it's not like we are benefiting from Lebanon. They need us more than we need them. Yet we are not able to hold accountable officials responsible for death of Americans. So imagine other countries.
Well, here's an idea for you as to consider as part of the Fakuri Foundation. Then we're going to talk about a letter. We're speaking with Gila and Zoya Fakuri of the Fakuri Foundation. And we're going to post all the links to all these items we're talking about. There's a letter that was issued last week. I wanted to share with you why they wrote that letter. We happily co-signed with them, and we're distributing it to folks. But before we get to that, how is it, I guess, that we're in this situation where we are allowing Lebanese officials? We're not going to use anybody's names here. You guys know who you are, but we're going to make it our life mission to make sure that you never come back into our country, and you know who you are. So we're going to be on you, and we're going to keep on the U.S. government to make sure you don't get back in here. Because Lebanon, my friends, has to pick a lane. The days of Lebanon making nice with the Iranians and the Hezbollah and everybody else, that has to end. You know, they fancy themselves, you know, I don't quite understand it. Maybe you all can explain it to our listeners. How is it that they get away with this? They, you know, because I think they encourage hostage taking. On the one hand, they come to America, oh, we're trying to help you. But guess what? And I'm not going to get into specifics because I can't. But I know Lebanon double deals on this issue. And that is not good anymore. That is not good enough. At least not up until the 11th. It was never good. But now we have this law in place. And you can't go around hiding under the intelligence fig leaf because it's getting Americans killed. So, and others taken hostage. By the way, we just found out. Now, you all are going to be upset about this. There may be another American that was taken hostage in Iran. We were trying to confirm the facts, but we have preliminary information from inside even prison that an American was taken hostage. A non-Iranian American. It's an American. We don't want to say too much yet, but we may have some news on that later. But so what is this? Before we get to the letter, can you all explain to us briefly, what's this duality that somehow these Lebanese officials think they can lie to America with impunity and get away with it?
I think because of the lack of consequences that they faced, that they feel comfortable to continue to do this because we've heard, you know, from sources in Lebanon that, you know, the individuals that we are seeking accountability for, that they're not scared because they know that the American government will back them up. And this makes us question, what do they have on America? Why is America prioritizing these officials more than they're prioritizing their own citizens?
Yeah, and I want to add, how are we gonna decrease hostage taken if you know, these officials are involved in illegally detaining our individuals. They torture them to the point where our father died. Yet it's going to be almost 3 years. No one was held accountable. Lebanon, nothing really changed in Lebanon. They're still getting money from the U.S. Officials are still traveling here. And this same thing happened in Iran. I mean, everything that's happening on the streets of Iran, yet we see, I don't remember the name, but some officials came to New York this week, while we also have American Iranians held illegally in Iran. We have other nationalities held illegally in Iran. So there's no consequences to these actions. So why would they stop doing it? In fact, they are benefiting from these illegal detention of individuals. Yes. They get what they want.
This does bring up a bigger conversation. You know, I constantly see on social media people asking for their loved ones to return home, advocating for bringing home hostages. Yet we're never talking about the accountability portion of it. We're never talking about why these countries continue to feel comfortable taking these individuals, torturing them, and detaining them for years.
Exactly.
That's, we're never talking about that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's why they keep doing it. Zoya, I think they keep doing it,
it's
for
like
that reason.
Business.
It is a business.
Exactly. Fact, it's a business.
It's a business. In fact, there's a lawsuit that we filed on behalf of another a hostage in the same court that you're in. And we accused the Iranian regime of racketeering, you know, RICO, a business, pretty much an organized crime, like almost mob-like business. And I'm going to give an idea to you all. Think about it. You know that oil and gas deal that Iran just signed? Excuse me, that Iran, that Lebanon. Yeah, Lebanon. Iran's
well,
also there.
Iran.
Hezbollah
signed
it,
basically.
Hezbollah signed, Hezbollah signed, so Iran's there with Israel and all that. And you know what? Maybe you all should start targeting that money too and go after that in your lawsuit as well. And make sure that everybody knows and make them very scared with your lawsuit against the people who did this to your family, because it's really clamors for more than what our government is doing. So the letter, you all put out a great letter. We're circulating with our groups. Tell us a little bit why you felt you had to publish an accountability letter toward the end of the year.
Honestly, Jason, you know, we like we talked about, we have the Levinson Act on paper stating that the U.S. government is authorized to impose visa and property blocking sanctions against any foreign person that played a role in illegal detention. However, it's just words on paper at this point, because whenever we talk about accountability to government officials, we're ignored. Our story is pushed under the rug. No one wants to actually take action on the Levinson Act. So we had to put basically the Levinson Act into a letter to send, which is honestly quite sad if you think about it, that we're just basically taking the Levinson Act and sending it as a letter and telling these officials, this is an act under the U.S. government. Please actually
follow the law. Act on it. Act on
exactly.
It.
And we wanted to send this letter publicly because we've been having a lot of meetings. We've been having meetings with the State Department for 2 years now. And not just us. We bring forward cases, whether in Lebanon or Lebanese Americans or Lebanese who were able to escape to America. We bring them forth. We let them talk to the Department of Human Rights and Labor, to the State Department, to shed light on the torture and on the human rights abuse that's happening in Lebanon. Yet we see no action. So it's not just our case. There's a lot of cases that we have brought forward, and they talk to us, they seem enthusiastic, and that's it. This is where it ends. So we had to do something publicly. And from now on, this is the route that we're going to take. We're going to publicly shed light on what's happening.
And by the way, a shout out to, we talked a lot about the State Department in a generic way, but there's a few solid liberty warriors inside State Department, inside the NSC. They know who they are, and some other people. Thank you for what you do. We hope you get the leadership that you need from the very top, because you're not getting it, in our opinion. Nobody has told us that. That's just an outside observer's, somebody who spent 3 decades in Washington, D.C., and when I see a lack of political will, it's kind of pretty easy to tell that this is politics, but there's some good people. I know Zoe Aguila, you know, some great people inside the hostage community in the government, at the FBI also. These people work day and night. They love what they do. They're passionate about it. I think they need some support from the top. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I agree. And I see it when we do meet with people in Congress, when we do meet with members of the State Department. Like Gila said earlier, they are enthusiastic at first. You know, they want to help us. They see the injustice we faced and they want to help. But then we don't know what happens when they go back to meet with whoever is above them. But something happened that all of a sudden our emails get ignored. All of a sudden, the next time we meet with them, they're more quiet. They're not as enthusiastic. So it's someone that is prioritizing Lebanese officials over American citizens. Someone in the government. I don't know who. That's the thing. We don't know what's going on.
And it's not just that. It's what is Lebanon giving America that it's taken priority over a dead American citizen?
Yeah. You know, do you know my advice to them on what they should be accepting from Lebanon? Absolutely nothing. They're speaking, and if they move their lips, they're lying. Okay. No Lebanese official can be taken at face value because they lie all the time. And I know that it's difficult for you, but keep at it because you're making a difference. It may not seem like it, but remember, you all moved in 9 months. You all went from your father passing away to filing a lawsuit. You've come to Washington to join the hostage community to do protests. You've gone to panels here. You've gone to countless meetings in Congress. You're engaging in a very robust accountability battle that we know is not easy, and you are making a difference, and you're making it better for other families also. So don't get discouraged by it. You also give me a lot of energy to see a new generation of activists who has taken this very personally. And I mean, how can you not? But a lot of families do not want to talk about this when they go through this. And I think as we come to the end of our show, I think it'd be helpful to give some advice, if you can, to a family that maybe has lived through this. What should they think about if they're going to engage in this type of a battle? Because it's not easy. You've already said today, I think Zoe or Gila, both of you have said this, that this is draining on your time. And you also want to move on. You want to just close this for your family, for your father, who I know is up there giving you support. What advice, practical tips, in the little time we have left, do you have for families that are either going through a hostage or unlawful detention case, or who are maybe quietly considering, hey, should I do something?
I think it's finding a support community first to motivate you, because this is something we struggled with when we started this fight. You know, we tried, you know, joining other NGOs and, you know, finding that our support community, but we got disheartened a lot, and we felt like no one was as motivated as us to get justice. You know, that like there are acts in place. However, even the people that were in support of these acts, they're not even as motivated to actually stand up to what's right and actually turn words into action. And so it's finding that support community to keep pushing. And like, if we didn't have that, I feel like, and thank God we have our family, and that's what keeps us motivated to continue this fight. But finding other people outside of your family to also push you, because I feel like that's the only thing that really keeps you going. Like, we're so grateful for you, Jason, for seeing our efforts and recognizing what we have done and joining us in our efforts. Yeah, I feel like that has been a big push for us as well.
I would like to add to the families that it is a long journey. It's not easy. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, I believe. And the more we push toward accountability, even if we're going to be the first family that publicly ask for accountability and hold officials accountable, we hope to be an example for other families to fight for justice for their loved ones. And for us in the foundation and as a family, we don't care about politics. We're going to keep pushing until we get justice for our father.
And we've been talking to Zoya and Gila Fakuri, of the Fakuri Foundation. I want to just first thank you all for what you're doing. I can't express our gratitude enough for having you all in this community and robustly pursuing justice for your father and for other families. Remember, folks, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. That's a Dietrich Bonhoeffer quote, of course, not mine. You have to face evil. This family is showing you a way to do it, a way that's very American, a way that's very civilized, a way that doesn't give the aggressor the upper hand. And I think people should study it and join them. If they can, please visit the Fakuri Foundation website. We're going to give you all links, support them however you can. Give them money if you can. Yes, I'll be very shameless about it. They need the financial support, but they need more than that. They need your prayers. They need you just spread the word. Invite them to come speak at your events. I'm sure that one of the, how many sisters are there? The four of you and the brother?
Just four sisters.
It's four sisters. That's right. Four sisters. One of them will find a way to go speak at your event. Have them give you some background about the case. There's a lot we didn't talk about. Hopefully you can come back. Zoya, Gila, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners or people who may be listening who have not been responding?
I just want to thank you again, Jason, for giving us this platform to speak about this issue. Like I said, we felt like we've been getting ignored a lot. And so you allowing us to speak on this really means the world to us. And to whoever is listening, please help us shed light on this issue. Help us turn the Levinson Act into action and hold these individuals accountable, because illegal detention will continue to happen. And we see this every year. New people continue to get detained in different countries. And in the same countries we've been seeing. If we stay silent and do not hold these individuals accountable for their actions, and I'm not talking about holding accountable low-level guards who did not order these people to get detained in the first place. I'm talking about the actual people in charge of the hostage-taking game. These individuals need to face consequences, or else we will continue to see illegal detention happen.
Gila, you have anything to say before we wrap up?
I would like to thank you, Jason, for this opportunity. And I would like to just ask for the support of the listeners. Visit our website. The foundation is doing great work, whether with families or on the accountability efforts. And thank you again for having us today.
Thank you all. Have a great rest of the week. And we look forward to having you back here again.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.